cardiac arrest. She needs to restart his heart.
What? How do I do that?
Rub your hands together to create lightning and then give him a chest compression.
Come on. It's not working!
Welcome once again to Central City Underground, episode 119. This is your host, Jada, aka Story's Voice.
And the Professor. It's Chris. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Underground.
We've got episode 7 of season 5. O Come All Ye Thankful.
I'm not going to sing.
Oh, I was waiting for it. I just know Chris is going to, the Professor's just going to belt out some epic tune, but I guess not. Well, I mean, why aren't you singing? How did you feel about this episode?
This week, I gave the episode a 7 out of 10 flash-cooked turkeys. Jada, what was the rating this week?
You know, I liked it this week. I gave it 8 out of 10 frosty reminders of what it means to be thankful from a killer.
I like what you did there.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. There's certain spots that got to me that made me say, yeah, I really did like this episode. I didn't think it was epic or great or like mind-blowing, but I thought it was a good episode.
Yeah, in my opinion, it wasn't the worst episode of the entire series.
Well, that's good. That's good.
You know, I think part of me subconsciously rated it lower, knowing that, not to get ahead, but that next week is the 100th episode of the series. I don't know how we're going to contain ourselves based on things that, you know, should be happening in the episode. But again, that's a story for next week. I think subconsciously I kind of held myself back.
I can understand that. I can understand that next week does look pretty intense.
But this week, O Come All Ye Thankful, I think the episode was pretty straightforward. There were, in my opinion, and let me know if you feel otherwise, I think there were really only three major themes to the episode and, you know, things we can look at. But let's start with things that made us go, ooh.
All right, let's do that, Chris. What made you go, ooh?
Now, again, an episode that I only gave 7 out of 10. The only thing that made me go, ooh, and I was like, ooh and wow, was the entire sequence that revolved around the lightning tornado near the end of the episode.
I think part of the reason I gave this episode an 8 was because for whatever reason, which I haven't broken down yet, it made me feel the stakes. It made me feel what was at stake and him running in that scene. The tornado was great, but also the emotional get, I think, is what got me to say, ooh.
I really have to agree with you there because you mentioned the word feelings. And this episode overall really pulled at my emotions. I felt with again, what I think are the three things that happened in this episode, each in a different way, made me feel something. I remember something else that made me go, ooh, so I just added it to our notes here that we prepare for each episode. And that was Weather Witch dropping a Hummer on the hologram version of her father, which she didn't know was a hologram of her dad. But that let you know right there in that moment what she was all about and what her purpose was and what her goals were. And just not, you know, we didn't know it was a hologram until after the fact. But for a second, did you also think that she just killed her father?
To be honest, I was under the misconception that was Ralph Dibny.
In a Ralphless episode, you thought that's where they were going to use him?
Well, you know, I was like, wait a minute, we haven't even seen Ralph. Maybe it'll be a surprise and they'd be like, we went and grabbed Ralph from something doing, yeah, no, I was wrong. It was a hologram. So it was, while it was a shocking act, me thinking that was Dibny, I didn't feel like, oh no, he's dead. I thought if it is Dibny, then well, maybe he'll just, you know, squish and then reform. Then it was like, oh, it was a hologram. So I guess it's still okay. So I kind of screwed myself on that one. I didn't get the punch that I should have from the car dropping.
Now, in remembering this, we also find out after that happens that it was Iris back at Star Labs working what looked like a very sophisticated virtual reality equipment. Do you think that this could be something that we see it here and the ability to, because we've never seen, we haven't seen this before. The only thing we've seen like this in the series previous was when the version of Wells had the face changer.
Yes, yes.
So this is some new type of hologram technology that they now have at their disposal?
I feel as if maybe once in the past that they used a hologram in a similar way. And I can't remember. I feel as if it might have been Savitar or something. I can't remember it, but I think that they have that VR set up now as a new piece of technology is great. It's good. It could be a lot of fun and they could use it. It obviously fools people. So yeah, I like it.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed pretty cool. I was impressed. It got a little bit of an ooh out of me, but I just started to think, is this something that they'll be able to use somewhere later in the season where the hologram is even better? And who knows? All right. So I am sure that as we go through and talk about more things in the episode, we will remember other things that kind of piqued our interest and got our attention. But as I said a couple minutes ago, there were, I think, three major plot points here in this episode, and we'll go through these. Number one, we have father-daughter relationships. So we have some daddy-daughter issues in many aspects. We have the Thanksgiving blues. Wah, wah. And again, I think a big piece of this episode that carried it for me, at least, was we get Cicada's origin in flashback form. So Jada, where would you like to start amongst those three?
Okay, to be truthful, my favorite part also was Cicada's origin, so I'd like to save that for last.
Okay.
I'm getting into that. Let's just go ahead and talk about the Thanksgiving blues.
All right. Go ahead. Lay it on us.
It's odd, but I still don't know how I feel about Sherlock. Luke. But this episode did a lot to help. He seems to be finding his place amongst the team a little bit, much as previous iterations of him have. But it was very interesting how bitter he was. He was so bitter. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was like, oh, what a cruel holiday.
Well, what I found humorous was the fact that he initially has no idea what the holiday is. So whatever Earth he's from, they don't have Thanksgiving.
And it kind of makes sense. You know, Thanksgiving, there's all kinds of issues with Thanksgiving and ways that it could have been changed or altered even slightly in an alternate world. You know, it's not such a big thing. So I can understand that. But yeah, his reaction to it was what was like, okay, all right.
I also found humor in the way that Sisko was trying to explain what Thanksgiving is.
Yes. Sisko. Wow. Yeah. Sisko just wasn't on point this episode. Like, he couldn't get it together.
Yeah. But actually, I was just about to say that at least in that instance, at that part of the story, I feel like that was, for me, classic Sisko, like trying to explain and the rapport and the back and forth he was having with Wells, obviously, our new version of Wells, but I like Sisko in this episode.
Yeah. And I think that might be some of what we're missing. Not to say that we're missing much or that it's such a big thing that it's a glaring hole or anything, but more jovialness from Sisko. Like, we need that. Not just throwaway one-liners, but a general sense of like, be happy, Sisko, please. We like Sisko happy.
And of course, Caitlin comes in and she gives the explanation and that leads to him understanding it and then throwing some shade on Thanksgiving and turning, like, obviously Sisko and Caitlin seem like they were all about it. And then he just totally rains on their parade about, you know, being invited. And at this moment, you know, they're really, you know, welcoming in Sherlock into the Flash family. And he just kind of poo-poos that.
Yeah. And I can understand why they would so quickly kind of realign themselves with him, because they have been through a lot and they've been trying to be good people and do the right thing. They probably don't have a lot of actual rage outlets, you know? So when the opportunity comes to be passive aggressive, then they just jump at it. Fine, then we don't actually get to destroy or harm anything, but I'm going to harumph in the corner as much as I can, you know?
Again, more classic Cisco when he comes back into the cortex and he's like throwing out questions that, I mean, we hear, you know, outside of TV land, see that what people question and ask about Thanksgiving. Like, we celebrate, you know, the slaughtering of the Native Americans, and we're not here to go too deep into that topic, but, you know, the writer's putting in, you know, these actual social questions that people ask now in terms of why do we have this holiday? So a nice little bit of social commentary from the writer's room. A surprising thing happens related to these Thanksgiving blues, and the sun comes out and the scene is warmed by the most unlikeliest of people, Killer Frost.
Killer Frost. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. She's come a long way.
She was funny in her own right. Just the way she was. First, great transition. That was just some great, you know, just, hey, I'm here.
Yeah. No effort, no problem. I'm back and I'm really back. Yeah. I enjoyed it. That was great. And like I said, that's really got to shake you up to know that, okay, this reformed killer is schooling us on holiday cheer. We better shake out of this.
Well, see, you know, I don't even necessarily know that she's reformed, because, you know, if we think back again, we're going to sort of be a little bit more reflective now as we get to the 100th episode. We have to remember that the Killer Frost we see, this is not the Killer Frost from the previous season, where that's the Earth 2 Caitlin. This is who they just call Killer Frost, who has been a part of our Caitlin that we've known since episode 1, season 1. So it's two different Killer Frosts.
Yeah, that's very true. If you really want to look into it with the new added information of her backstory, it could be even more Killer Frost after Flashpoint. And that's very true. So I guess that just makes it all that more interesting, her developing personality, you know, how we see her or how she actually is. All of it. It's great. I like what they're doing with the character. I hope Killer Frost stays for quite a while.
I just wonder if there'll ever be some sort of name change if she actually becomes more heroic. And I think she is at this point a hero. So it's still kind of funny that they refer to her as Killer Frost.
Yeah. It's weird. We get so used to saying it. It just rolls off the tongue because we know her as that, but the actual word means something and it's not good.
Oh, hey, you killer, you.
Oh, killer. yeah. I don't think that would go over too well with her.
But again, ultimately, to bring it back to the episode, she gets Sherlock and Cisco to partake in the Thanksgiving festivities because, as she puts it, you could sit here and be miserable and have atrocious food, or why don't we go and have good food with people who care about us? So for her to recognize that was also really cool. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up related to Killer Frost was the point in the episode where they realize, oh, you can at a whim talk to Killer Frost as Caitlin. Like, you can talk to each other.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a.
And without the cerebral,
inhibitor
dead thing, the dampener.
Yeah. Which begs several questions, one of which being, is this a steady progression, like a natural steady progression, or is this possibly her, through her efforts, developing and expanding her power slash mind set? It'd be interesting to see where they go with it.
I like what you just said in that they're going to, I think they're going to further develop the ease at which she can move between the two personalities and kind of almost on demand have the powers at her disposal versus having what Caitlin Snow brings to the table and to the team, you know, make it seamless.
I hope so, because at this point, yeah, we know what's going on. There's no need to really dwell on it. And it would be so much easier for this plot if, you know, she can just do that without, you know, just shorthand, bam, she's someone else.
So by process of elimination, again, we're going to hit on Cicada's origin, but Jada, you want to hit that last. So next up in terms of plot points are our daddy-daughter relationship dynamics. And we've got three in this episode. We have the events and the storyline that take place between Barry and Nora. We have the relationship that is presented to us between the Weather Wizard and the Weather Witch. And what'll bleed into our final topic, the relationship between Cicada and Grace. So why don't we start with Barry and Nora? Jada, can you recap that for the Undergrounders?
Since Nora's been back, they've had a pretty intense relationship. I mean, you know, getting to know each other. But it seems that she really starting to realize how dangerous this is. She sees that Barry really puts himself out there at risk, truly, more often than she thought. I have a feeling that Nora took more of a comic book type view of what her father did. When I say that, I mean, like, when you think Silver Age, you think of, oh yeah, he's stopping those robbers and he's saving this and saving that. But a lot of his adventures are life-threatening, world-ending, epic adventures. And in her seeing that, I think it really started to tear at her. The two of them go through quite a little journey in this episode, and I think it was really, really touching. Nora, she almost brought me to tears several times. Maybe not really tears, but I felt some feeling somewhere. I know that. Her performance this week was great as she tried to parse through letting go of Barry to a point of allowing him to do what he needed to do so that he could either protect her fully or come back home to her.
Yeah, my two thoughts on that. Number one, to piggyback on what you said, definitely she sees him in a new light, whereas, as I saw it, she sees him as, and really this stems to him disappearing in the future and not being a part of her life, that I think she had previously been under the impression he was taken and disappeared. But now she's learning from being with him, typically he's making the choice to literally be the hero and making the decision that puts him at risk for the safety of others, whether it's Iris, Team Flash, the city. And she's, and we're seeing it in real time. We're seeing her process that. So we see that ebb and flow of emotion where she's starting to really understand that. And we get that here, to the point where she causes Barry in a scene or two, and he mentions it to Iris, maybe I need convincing to go out there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then the second thing, based on what you said, when we get near the end of the episode where she lets him go, it just typically we see that type of thing in media where it's, you know, between two people in love, whether it's like, say, a Lois Lane, for example, you know, coming to grips with, you know, I have to share Superman with the world.
Right.
Here we see not two people in a romantic relationship, but obviously we're getting the father-daughter dynamic of she is the daughter realizing you're my dad, but you are a hero. You're so much to so many, and I can't be selfish to keep you to myself. And we've seen that in all sorts of films where somebody has to be understanding of what the other person needs to do. Typically, in this case, a hero.
Yeah. And I thought the way they played out that quote unquote trope, this particular episode was done very well. We watch them and we see Barry struggling with the question that she's asking him, you know, what is it in you that allows you to go out there and do that? You know, and why would you continue to do this?
And she straight up asks him, hey, stop being the Flash and you won't disappear in the future.
Yeah. Oh man. Wow. Yeah, that's true. That scene was great. And that scene hurt. It cut to the quick. It was like, she is so not wrong.
Now, here's the funny thing that made me think, and this is what I'm thinking. I'm going to recap what I was thinking in real time. If we go back to the idea, and we're going to get there in the next few episodes, you know, who's pulling the strings in the future? Who, because we know at this point, there's got to be somebody who filled her head with these ideas, because we know it wasn't Iris in the future.
Right.
Okay? So again, follow with me. Based on that, did that person also plant in her head, see if you can get Barry to stop being the Flash?
Yeah. You know, I had that exact same thought. Because that's immediately what she went to, almost as if it was a thought that she'd had in her mind several times. I'm sure she's mulled it over many times throughout the however long. Actually, I'm not really sure how long that she's known. Now, has she always known that her father was the Flash, or was that a recent reveal in her personal timeline as well?
I'm not sure about that. And the other thing, and actually, you also bring up, there was some dialogue in this episode, and I'll chalk it up to hand-wavy stuff, that there are things that she says sometimes that, again, lead you to believe she's, again, last episode, or a couple episodes ago, it was, I've only had these powers for 6 months, based on her perspective on her life. I've only been doing this for 6 months. But there are things, there was some dialogue in this episode that made it sound like, I've been catching criminals and doing all these things for quite some time. So there are some things that aren't matching up dialogue-wise. But again, to get back to our little debate here, I think there's somebody in the future who maybe the plan was, all right, fine. You have these powers. Let me show you how to go back in time. Go ahead, meet him. And that person's ulterior motives might be, let's get him to stop being the Flash. So get to know him and then see if you can convince him. That's how you can save him, by him not being the Flash.
And, you know, okay, in some private little corner in the back of my mind, what I see is some villain in some almost innocent role, janitor or whatever, saying, you know, I don't know what's wrong with people like that. Maybe if they just stopped doing what they were doing, they wouldn't, you know, something offhanded. I feel like it would be something sneaky, like there's something very devious, really playing on her fears. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see where all this is coming from. But, you know, that being said, she played that role so well. She emoted perfectly. You could see that the love that you spoke of. And you could see the fear and uncertainty. You could see all that mixed up together, like just running across her face. It was great. I thought it was an excellent performance, especially when she had to bring him back and she feared that he was really gone. That was, I enjoyed it.
Which was, okay, another power she learned she has, which is, I can be a human defibrillator.
Right. Hey, that's handy.
I like that. You are a quick one, Mr. Story's voice. Oh, you are a quick one.
I'm no Flash. Okay, one last thing about those guys, though. I'm sorry. I know I'm rambling on about it. Like I said, I enjoyed this episode. I also enjoyed the reveal of what Barry said, like his actual answer to her question. I do this to protect you, essentially, is what it was distilled down into. But that scene, Grant Gustin's delivery of that scene, the way it was written, yeah, everything about that just, yeah, got me all warm and fuzzy on the inside. I was like, oh, that's good stuff. It's dusty in here, but that's good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Projecting why he made that, why he believes he'll make that decision in the future. He's leaving. He knows he's got the daughter. She's not born after he's gone.
Right.
So, yeah, but very well done and certainly well played by Grant. Now, our second daddy-daughter relationship issue in this episode, not as developed as I would have liked, but we get a sense of the relationship between the Weather Wizard and his estranged daughter, the Weather Witch.
Yeah. How did you feel about this relationship and the way it was presented to us?
Well, again, we don't really find out the true dynamic of the relationship until she goes to drop the truck on him and we find out that her intention is to kill him. Up until that point, we're led to believe she wants to get him maybe out of prison and be back together as father and daughter and, you know, wreak havoc with their weather powers together. I thought the scene in Iron Heights was pretty cool, the way she basically, you know, comes in, causes weather, throws the wind around. And so that was well done effects wise. But then we don't really learn until after she drops it that, hey, thanks for, you know, bringing my dad right to me. And for that few split seconds, she believes she accomplished her goal. And we find out that she did not think he was that great a guy. And she uses a word on TV that I'm not going to use here on the podcast.
Yeah. I'll say that by the end of the episode, I was okay with it. In the beginning, it felt quite forced, even before we were even before we knew her motives. It felt forced, too forced and too coincidental. yeah, Weather Wizard, Weather Witch. And I was trying to be
fair, that name came off the side of her little weather van.
Yes, yes.
Which yes, Cisco was like, all right, okay, we can do that. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, I did like that. Cisco was like, yeah, no, it's that's acceptable. Good. That's good. <It's acceptable. laughs> I think, okay, in the beginning when they were presenting their relationship to me, I was thinking, well, how is this going to work? She's kind of old to have been born since any of the incidents, you know? I was like, and I had totally forgotten about Meditech. But just the odds of him getting weather powers and her being a storm chaser and getting weather witch powers, it threw me off in the beginning. But I think at some point I waved my hand and I was okay with it.
Do we want to invoke the hosts of Podcast Past and just go with explain nothing?
Yeah, I think we shall. It's a good call.
We love you, Tony and Joe.
Yes. how did you feel about her, about the level of power that her particular wand gave her? Because to be honest, that she was teleporting, riding lightning, you know, and all the things we saw her do, that was like, that was almost more intense than her father, I believe.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely comes across as more intense in terms of power. And considering, again, this goes back to where we are. If we think about our timeline, Flash is still, okay, we're at Thanksgiving. Did we hand wave away the time gap? Because remember, when this season started, it picks up right after season 4 ends.
Right.
And now we're at Thanksgiving. So, oh. Where did we make up the 3 months time?
Oh.
Explain nothing. Anyway. So, if she, I mean, so technically, she, the Weather Witch, she's only had her powers for a short amount of time, maybe 3 to 4 months. But again, now we're, it seems like we're at December and everything somehow now lines up.
You know, I hadn't thought about that.
That's the kind of stuff I think about.
But in the end, they did get the wand. They did get the staff from her. So that's a good thing, I think, which made me wonder. So now do we have a flash vault of some kind? I guess the...
Funny you should say that, but go ahead.
I guess the... what do they call it? Not the speak pipe, I'm sorry.
The time vault.
The time vault, yeah. I want to think that'd be a good place to store all that meditech, but we've seen people break into there, and security is just not great on Star Labs.
Get a cup of coffee, and then they go downstairs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that whatever they put it in, that did not look like it was in the most secure place in Star Labs.
Yeah, it was the pipeline, right, where they used to... Back in the days when it was an illegal prison, black site, where they just kept people.
That's true. They basically look like they put it in one of those things, one of those containment units.
But that doesn't seem all that... You know what? I'll explain nothing.
Plot device getting another Actors Guild credit.
Right? Wow. This guy should win an award.
One day, Plot Device will be on stage, holding the hardware. What did they used to call it on this show? The Scepter of...
Oh, you know, I honestly cannot remember.
Undergrounders, if you remember what they used to, I'm not going back, but let us know.
Yeah.
It was the Scepter of something. Let us know in the Facebook group. All right, and I guess... We're ready to bleed into, I think, what was the meat and potatoes of the episode. I think all the, again, we're looking at an episode where everything the Flash does, I don't think it was as important as the information we got related to our current major villain. And that also deals with the daddy-daughter relationship between Cicada and Grace. And we can really now talk about Cicada's origin, which again, we got through flashbacks in this episode. So first, we very quickly find out that Cicada is not Grace's father. What did you think of that?
I absolutely love that so much. I thought that was the most subtle and perfect kind of twist that a story or story arc like this could have taken, because it's quite something to witness the power of a parent. You know, the love for a child will push him to do all kinds of things. But as the story went on and we discovered that it was such a healing and redeeming factor of his life, that made it almost even more tragic, and I really enjoyed it.
I mean, this is the kind of thing that I'm sure we've seen movies about where, you know, you have an adult figure and an unwanted child that comes into their life. I think there was an Adam Sandler movie about this. And, you know, she's basically brought to his doorstep via tragedy, a metahuman tragedy that causes her actual parents to be killed. And we meet Cicada, who at this time is Orling. And he is a broken man. He has a crappy apartment, looks like he's got a crappy life, and this little girl comes into his life. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, up until the accident, during the Enlightenment, she changes his life for the better.
Definitely for the better. I really enjoyed their interactions.
Yeah, their interactions were really good. And you figure over the course of this, you know, 45-minute episode of content, you know, through, what was it, maybe 3 to 5 flashback sequences, they tugged at my heartstrings. And I think they tugged at a lot of people's heartstrings to make you feel and really get you inside the mind of this man who has, for all intents and purposes, nothing, gains the world through this young girl, and then has this tragedy happen that changes his life. And, you know, anybody who goes through this can go one of two ways. And now we're seeing how he got to be where he is. And really, we now understand why he's doing what he's doing. And it's all for grace.
Yes. It was beautifully portrayed. It was well written, well acted. And again, the dynamics that it puts on Cicada as a character, as opposed to being, I mean, again, I don't want to belittle the idea of a father or a parent fighting for their child, but it's a current theme because it's such a potent idea. But this really changed him. And I think that they really, really want us to start to feel for Cicada so that when whatever happens, happens later, we'll feel it on a deeper level.
Now, the other thing that came to mind for me that didn't make me go, ooh, like we've talked about with other things, but we also learn that the doctor at the hospital, she's not the most upstanding person. She's got some flaws to her character, not in a how she's written, but actually who she is as a character. She is a flawed human being. And part of me also questions, does she play a bigger role going forward that we're not yet aware of, based on how she is helping and supporting Cicada? Because I think she knows full well what he's doing based on his injury and, you know, the Speed Force dagger and, you know, all those things.
Absolutely. She is quite implicit in a lot of what's going on. She knows fully. I'm not sure yet how really to parse that character. She wants to do such good, and she sees the tragedy that's all around her, and she's trying to do what's right, but man, she has to know that it's not, it's just wrong. But somehow I still feel a deep sympathy for her, seeing what's going on and knowing that, you know what, I guess I like her because she symbolizes hope yet again. She hopes.
Doctor?
Yeah. Because she hopes that this little girl will someday come out of that coma, and this man will stop killing, and this man will get the love that he needs to heal. And that's why she's doing all the things that I'm sure she doesn't really believe she should be doing. Just to try and heal them both physically and spiritually. So she kind of represents hope in a weird way, but this particular episode, it's like she's really stepping across that line. Like, you're just blatantly helping a killer at this point.
To that point, there was a point in the episode where I thought, gosh, if only Barry could have a heart-to-heart with Cicada and maybe transfer Grace to Star Labs, and maybe they can help her and get her out of the coma, or, you know, hey, let's contact the Legends and, you know, can we put her on the waiver? Could Gideon help the child? You know?
Yeah. And, you know, that's a very interesting question because I hadn't really thought about that. That could be done in so many ways because I don't really believe that they said that it was any kind of meta-related illness. She just had brain damage and was in a coma.
Yeah, I mean, we don't see during that scene at the fair that she was hit with any debris from the falling Starlab satellite. You know, all I recall seeing is she felt it. She, you know, was knocked to the ground and, you know, maybe hitting the head, you know, again, this is not a medical podcast. you know, maybe there's, you know, internal bleedings and, you know, hemorrhages in the brain and the skull, and just that's what's keeping her in the coma. And, you know, I'm not a doctor.
No, but yeah, that being said, Professor, we have seen Barry with Savitar, the remnant, or won't even get into that. We've seen him want to take the option of, hey, let's talk to him. So we know it's a possibility. So it's not that far of a leap to think that, yes, well, if this guy is possibly bent on destruction of everything simply because he wants to protect his daughter, why don't we heal her? They can hop dimensions and travel through time and phase through things and everything. There is somebody in the multiverse that can heal that little girl. And that would be such a better and more humanitarian way to do it than fight her dad.
True. But then we wouldn't have much of a show.
Oh, yes. So never mind. Scrap that.
They'd have to change it to Barry Allen Saves the Universe.
Yes.
Literally.
Yeah. But, you know, it would be interesting, though, if they did do that, because it would force Cicada to really come at them with everything he's got. And maybe that's what will happen in the end. It's just come. Well, maybe not the healing her. I don't know.
And again, we see more evidence of his growing strength. Where he just,
oh, yes, that's right,
beats his refrigerator.
Yeah, this is getting nasty. He's amping up in power and angst.
Yes, and it just makes you wonder, what is this going to turn into? What is the end result? Is this, or what will the final version of Cicada be? Because in essence, we're seeing him develop as he gains strength and power.
I wonder if he is already more powerful than the cicadas that Sherlock has subdued in the past, because he would show up on the scene, I'm sure, with all this knowledge of, you know, what's going to happen. We can stop him now. But this cicada seems to have gone on longer and further than the others. So I can imagine not only is he pretty powerful, but that makes him probably pretty unique in the multiverse. Maybe not unique, it's the multiverse, but pretty close to special.
Yeah, if we recall back to episode 1 or 2 of this season, where Nora makes mention of, you know, Cicada was like a quick little thing, like a little blip on the screen. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, then, you know, we go through the trail of, oh, it's a completely different person. So you figure you're now taking the idea of the Speed Force dagger, now this dark matter based on, you know, Orland's background and who he is as a person and how broken he was. Now you're putting the dark matter into somebody like that, as opposed to the one who 37 other times was Cicada on the other Earths. So.
Oh, wait. Yeah, that's right. Oh, this multiverse stuff is so confusing.
It's almost as bad as the many-verse.
Right. Oh, no. Oh, no. Bring Dibny back.
Yeah, we need the baby giraffe.
Yeah. Oh, baby giraffe.
I think that's our major plot points. Let's tackle our feedback, which sadly we don't have a lot of. Then we'll hit the episode, the epilogue stinger. And then we'll, just like you who's listening, make our march to episode 100, which is just a few days away upon release of this episode. So, feedback this episode. Jay, do you want to take our piece of feedback this week?
I absolutely can. I do. I love reading. Reading's fun. I can do it too. This feedback comes from our Facebook group. Todd says, okay, this was a great ep. Really dramatic. Watching Frost just come out whenever. Nora's all over the map, though. Hate mom, love dad, want to save dad, love mom, hate dad, want dad to stop being Flash. Yeah. Not going to happen, sweetheart. Can I say, though, I'm kind of more psyched for a crossover than the Flash episode 100. Because, sure, it looks crazy, but it's super plot device-y to bring all the old speedster villains back in and still, like, Barry's learned nothing from, one, Flashpoint, two, Nora fracking up her future. Has he really learned nothing? Or fail to learn yet again that time travel creates so many problems, many more problems than it solves. Unless you reverse Flash for some reason. Kind of think they keep going back to that well. It's frustrating. Oh, that well. I see what he did there. It's frustrating, but maybe it's just me. I may change my mind by next week. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you very much, Todd. Always great to see your comments in the CCU Facebook group. So where do we want to start here? Definitely agree with you about Frost being able to come out whenever she wants. Nora, we didn't really hit on this too much, but yeah, she went through, she ebbed and flowed again, happy with mom, not happy with mom, happy with dad. And really here for the first time, she expresses and puts into words what she's angry at. And that also kind of tugged at my heartstrings when she said that, hey, I'm kind of mad at you for leaving and putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
She's now learned it's a conscious choice you make.
That was beautiful, I thought. True character development, and it was acted as if she was really in the moment feeling that. Like, I mean, that's what she does. She's an actress, but she's such a good one. She really made me feel it and believe it. That scene was great, and when she said it, the recognition on her face of what she was saying and what she actually meant was great. I believed it all.
Todd, we're going to address the rest of your feedback in just a couple of minutes when we talk about next week's episode, again, episode 8, the 100th episode, because that's what you start to hit on. So thank you for taking time. This comment came up in the Facebook group during the live episode chat, and shout out to Mr. X-Force 11 for setting up the live discussion thread for the last couple of episodes. We really appreciate that.
Yes, we do. And thank you very much.
Again, the Facebook group for Central City Underground is a fun place to be with great articles that get shared from all of your favorite and even websites you don't even know exist that talk about all the CW Arrowverse shows. And of course, we love all the articles that people post about The Flash. So if you want to leave feedback for the show, the best way to do that is to call the GSM, the Golden Spiral Media feedback line. And that number is 304-837-2278. You can also go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And there's a great way you can leave some audio feedback there. You can also share your thoughts with us on social media. We are at The Flash GSM. You can also tag me. I am at CJ Nessie, N-E-S-I. And you can also tag Jada. Jada, what is your Twitter handle on the Twitters?
At Stories Voice, spelled as one word.
I couldn't get at The Professor. It was taken.
Oh, no. I can imagine.
And then, of course, go to facebook.com/groups/TheFlashGSM. Feedback is awesome. We love to play off of your words and share things here in the episodes for a TV show we super love. And just get that feedback to us by Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That being said, Story's Voice, let's do Flash Forward. And it's a good one.
Flash Forward, Season 5, Episode 8, What's Past is Prologue. The 100th episode, it'll be airing December 4th, 2018.
And syndication, baby.
You're right. Yes, that's wonderful. We did it, guys. I don't think there was ever any doubt. But in this 100th episode, Barry and Team Flash come up with a plan to stop Cicada. However, the plan calls for Barry and Nora to travel back in time to gather some key necessities. However, Barry hesitates, concerned about his daughter seeing certain parts of his life. Meanwhile, Sherlock takes his concerns about Nora to Iris, and Caitlin turns up a key asset in the fight against Cicada. And this one is directed by Tom Cavanaugh himself.
All right, let's break this down a little bit. So super congratulations to all the actors, all the people who make this show possible. And we're going to talk about this even again next week. But again, the 100th episode, congratulations to everybody who makes The Flash possible. Okay. What could possibly be in the past that's going to help them. Any thoughts?
No. Only because there's so little information there about the plot, about what's really going on.
I was going to say, he has never faced a villain like this. So I don't know what he's going to learn by interacting with or seeing something that Savitar did or Reverse Flash. Again, the plot device piece of this is they're going back to look at things that have happened over the previous 99 episodes.
It's a clip show.
Hopefully, hopefully it doesn't come across as a clip show.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like Barry Norm superimposed during the Savitar fight or something like that.
That'd be funny, though. That'd be funny.
You know.
And see, but that being said, on one hand, it kind of feels like it's a field trip for Nora, a learning lesson. But we know, much like Todd said, at this point, Barry has to know you don't go back in time. So that means the stakes or whatever he goes back in time for has to be more than just a field trip. But we don't know that much about Cicada, to be truthful. We don't really understand Cicada to know how he could be combated or what his true potential is, even. So it's hard to say what it would be that would cause them to go back in time. Witness.
Again, my solution ends the season next week. And, and that's, you want to go back in time? Go back 3 months or wherever they are in the timeline. You know who it is. Go back and stop the piece of shrapnel. Don't stop the satellites from getting destroyed, but go back and stop these people from getting hit with these scraps of satellite.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, though, that's easily as bad as Flashpoint.
That's true. We know that the timeline will want to correct itself and Jay Garrick will have his broken coffee mug.
No. You know, what I was actually thinking was all of the metas that Cicada has killed. Those are metas. And that alone means their potential to affect the timeline is probably a lot higher because they can affect more significant events, you know, by using their powers, by making a larger presence. Like, who knows what taking out those metas or even saving those metas might do to the timeline.
Okay, so hopefully whatever field trip they go on, I like the way you put that, whatever time traveling field trip they go on, it's not to prevent him from becoming Cicada. It's to let's pull things from the past that we can bring back to the present, back to the future, that they can bring back here to stop him now, not stop him at a previous point in time.
Yeah. I'm wondering if those things that they need are physical. Or is it just information, knowledge?
I'm going to go with knowledge. So let's play a little game. Jada, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're going to play a little game show here. I'm going to come up with some past Flash events. You tell me if Nora will get to see them.
Okay, let's go.
Here we go. We'll go with an easy one. Will Nora now witness Barry's mother being killed?
Oh, my goodness. You started there. Oh, Professor. Oh, that hurts. That's her grandma. No. There's no reason for Nora to see her grandmother get murdered. And now I feel just a little sadder for thinking about that. Thank you, sir.
You are welcome. On we go with the game show.
Yeah.
Will Barry and Nora interact with Eobard Wells?
Yeah, I hope so, because, God, I love that character, and I cannot wait to see that character again. So I don't know plot-wise, but in my heart, I truly hope it happens.
I have a second question that relates to that.
Mm-hmm.
Will Eobard Wells, like the last time Barry traveled back in time, will Eobard Wells know that it's Barry from the future needing his help.
Wow. Oh, yes. He was, I mean, he's not just a casual fan, and he's far beyond fanboy prime. He knows the Flash. He knows everything about the Flash. He probably knows each iteration of his suit, and he certainly knows who Nora is.
That's true. And what we have to remember with that is, if they meet that version of Wells from season one, that Eobard Thawne, that I believe, and I've read this other places too, so I subscribe to it, that is our best version of the reversed Flash that's out there. Everything we've seen after that is somebody who is younger and has not yet gone back in time to get us where we are.
Right. Yeah. Oh man, this is going to get complicated. Yeah.
Time travel does that to you. Get ready for a long episode next week, folks.
Yeah. He's going to be quite something, because this will also mean that he has known that this has happened. Unless they come up with some magic Hanwavian plot device that will zap his memory or whatever, or the timeline will heal itself or whatever. That'll mean he's known about this encounter as well that whole time. And yeah, I hope they pull it off well. I hope they do, because it has potential to be quite fun.
Now, cover your ears or fast flash forward. we already have confirmed, we know that Barry and Nora will have some type of interaction with Zoom.
Oh.
And Xavatar.
Okay. To be honest, when the trailer played, I just went by and I saw it and I tried to absorb as little as possible, even though I really wanted to see it. It was the equivalent of mentally peeking out.
See, from, you didn't listen. I said, cover your ears.
Yeah. That gets messy. That gets so messy.
All right. Rather than make a mess, let's all wait with bated breath to see episode 100 in a few days.
100th episode. Wow.
The 100th episode. So we're going to see you all next week. December 4th, episode 100 airs. Super excited. Tom Cavanaugh directing. Barry running. It's going to be a great episode. Thank you for listening to this episode of Central City Underground. This has been episode 120. For season 5, episode 7, Oh Come All Ye Thankful. I am Chris Nessie, and you can connect with me on Twitter at CJ Nessie. Jada, say goodbye to the people.
Goodbye, people, and run, Dad, run.